and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you are listening to Try It Live here on Blog Talk Radio. I am joined by my co-host. Her name is Casey Randall, calling in from Anchorage, Alaska. Casey, how's it going?
It's going well, and sorry we had a little bit of trouble connecting. It's good to be able to hear you, and you hear me now.
Yeah, all is well here. How are things down there in the big city?
Well, I'd love to be up where you're at and out of the big city right now, but things are going well, and we've got lots of snow. I know you do, too, and this is what we wanted, so it just keeps coming down.
It is beautiful up here. We have, about anywhere from waist-deep to chest-deep up here in Willow. Last week, it was minus 36 degrees here at the house. Our pipes froze up. It cost almost $1,000 to get them unthawed. But that's life living in Alaska, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. I was wondering about your pipes. Yeah, that can be a crazy mess. And, you know, when people go out of town here, I mean, even here, it got cold. It was, you know, getting close to negative 30 here, too, in some places of the city. And we're checking on a friend's house, too, because they're in Hawaii. And, you know, they're soaking up the sun while we're checking to make sure their pipes don't freeze, right?
Right. Well, like I said, living in Alaska for sure. You know, today we're going to talk about the sport of mushing and how that positive attitude relates not only to the musher but also to the team. And I know you're going to turn the tables a little bit and ask me some questions. Is that right?
I know. You're usually in the interviewer's seat, right? So now I get to ask you. And
right.
I want you to – I mean, I know a bit about mushing. I'm not a musher. Maybe someday, you know, but you are, and I would just love for you to tell us what is mushing. I mean, what do you do?
All right. Well, we are a kennel of 39 dogs up here in Willow. For folks that are listening outside, we are about an hour and a half north of Anchorage and about 250 miles south of Fairbanks. We happen to be in a very good spot for snow. Right down the road from us is the Willow Community Center and Willow Lake, where the Iditarod restart starts. It's been going on there for, I don't know, about a decade or so, I guess, is when they moved it finally up to Willow. And we have, right outside of our back, 200 to 250 miles of trails that we train our teams on. All of our dogs are Alaskan Huskies and Siberians. We do have three purebred Siberians, Bodie, Reagan, and Dandy. Bodie and Reagan are the spoiled ones. They come inside at night and always jump up on our bed and ask for Skittles every night. So it's a very interesting mix to have those little heathens in the house every night. But we spend a good portion of our day working with our dogs. I do own a business, a dog training business with my wife, so we do that to pay the bills. But other than that, we are usually working with the dogs well into the night and the first thing in the morning, and keeping real busy with that, not only feeding and training, but also taking care of them if they have health issues or we have to do grooming in the summer times or baths, et cetera. So it's almost a full-time job, Casey.
Right. Well, that was leading right into my first question for you is just, it takes a lot of time to take care of the dogs. And what does a typical day look like for you taking care of all of your dogs?
Well, in the morning, we typically get up about 5 o'clock and head out to the kennel. We will do our morning feeding, our morning chores. That takes about an hour, hour and a half or so. And then if we are not going to work or school or anything like that, we usually wait about an hour and a half or so for the food to settle before we go down and start hooking up our teams to run 40-mile run, which is our normal run around the block, as I say. It takes about 5 hours or so, and we have three teams that we run. So if we're doing all three teams, that sort of figures out where that is on the old clock. After that, we come back, we snack all of the dogs, and we do all of the chores for the evening, and then we will work with a dog or two if they need it, you know, for specialized type work, whether we're doing leader training or bike touring or whatever. And then typically, we come in, we sit down for dinner, at somewhere between 8, 9, 10 o'clock, and then we start all over again in the morning.
Wow, that is a very full day.
It is.
Well, now you talked about the cold, and, you know, a lot of people maybe from outside of Alaska don't realize that these dogs are, they're bred and made to run in the cold versus, you know, in the summertime, there's times when you can't run them, obviously not on a sled, but tell us about that with why are the dogs better in the cold and what do you do with them in the summer versus the winter?
Well, yeah, these guys are specially bred dogs. They are not your house pet. These guys are not bred or born to be your typical lay around on the couch type dogs. These guys love to be outside. They love to be with their pack. You know, we just mentioned at the top where it was about minus 36 degrees up here, and every one of those guys seemed to enjoy the weather. It wasn't a big thing to them. We came down to feed, and they were jumping around and playing and acting like their typical selves. They did not care it was that cold. When we do have temperatures that cold, we add straw to their houses, and the way that we do it is at every 10-degree drop, we add straw to their houses. So, you know, we start off with a nice batch of straw in the summer, then we work our way up, and by now, they have a very fluffy spot in their house in which to live. The summertime, it's vacation time for the dogs. They're typically found lounging on the top of their houses in the snow. They look exactly like Snoopy does when he lays on his house. All of our houses are red like Snoopy's houses, and you'll often find them sunning themselves up there. We also do a lot of free running in our backyard during the summertime where the dogs can run around and play with each other. And, of course, that's also when we're working with dogs individually in the summer, whether we're riding them on our bikes or just out walking with them or whatever. And then about mid-August or so, we start ATV training. It starts getting cooler, starts raining quite a bit up here, so we start our fall training on the ATV. And then typically sometime between Halloween and Thanksgiving, we're back on the sleds, and we're typically there until late April, early May, and then it starts all over again.
My goodness. Well, I just can only dream and only imagine what it would be like to be on the runners, you know, behind a team of 12 dogs, and you're in the silence of the night, you know, it's these negative temperatures, you're under the aurora. I mean, you guys are tough.
Right.
I've been watching the mushers come in from these latest races, men and women. And, oh, my goodness, what is it like to be out there? You know, you're with your dogs. I mean, what is that like?
It's absolutely beautiful. It's one of the most serene things that I have ever done. It's just total peace when you're out there, especially when you're out so far away from home that, you know, it's not like going out on your bike and you're on the road and you see traffic and you see other people and, you know, you're running through the neighborhoods or the trails or whatever. But when you're 40 or 50 or 60 miles into a training run and you're just out there with you and your dogs, it truly is you against everything else in terms of happiness. Not against, but for, I guess. It's just pure joy. You know, Casey, I took out a friend of mine yesterday, first time he had ever been around sled dogs, first time he had ever seen how we hook up and how we get ready to go. And we worked with him for an hour or so, just teaching him everything we could about mushing. And then he and I took out a team of 8 dogs apiece, and we went running for about 17 miles or so. And one of the first things he said when he got back was, I had no idea how tough that was. And it truly is, I mean, you're working your core, you're working your lower body, your upper body, you're having to move around, you have to move dogs around, you're having to turn and, you know, left and right and do all sorts of stuff. So it's a great exercise to get out there and work with the dogs, even with a smaller team like 8 dogs.
Right. You're not just getting a free ride on the sled. I mean, you're having to be in the physical condition to be able to ride on that sled. And of course, when things get stuck, I mean, the amount of moving you have to do, and And some people, you know, like Dallas Stevie, I know he's, you know, one that I did around here for a bit, and he's making a big name for himself, but he's a big runner, and he's always talking about running beside his sled. And I'm sure that there, you talk about doing that too. So yeah, you're not just getting a free ride, right?
Right. You are not getting a free ride. Kind of the typical rule of thumb is you typically will be running about 1 mile for every 10 that you're on the trail. So, and a lot of that is uphills or just to get your exercise yourself, to keep yourself warm, you run beside the trail. That's a pretty good rule of thumb, is about 1 in 10 behind the sled, unless you are folks like Dallas Seavey or one of the mushers that lives up here near Willow, Ramey Smith. Ramey, he wears running shoes on the last 100 miles or so of Iditarod, and he runs a good portion of that. That is an amazing feat to be out there in running shoes in the middle of winter with your dog team.
Right. Well, and I think, isn't Ramey known for his fast times on the coast? I mean, that's kind of his specialty once he gets to that area, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. He is a dominator there.
Well, tell me about now when you're on that sled. I mean, you've got these dogs in front of you. Now, are you the alpha dog? I mean, you know, sometimes my dogs take me for a walk. They're old dogs. They're 12 and 13 now, but they still take me for a walk. Now, what do you, are your dogs just taking you, or are you in control? Tell us about that.
Well, you know, that's a great question, Casey. When I had my friend Robert out here yesterday, or whenever we have people that come out that want to learn how to become mushers, one of the first things that I tell them is the dogs will not respect you if they don't know who you are. You have to bond with them. And a good portion of our time out in the kennel is just sitting with the dogs and bonding with them and talking to them and telling them stories and just getting to know the dogs. And I tell you what, if the dogs do not respect you, they're not going to perform as well for you. We have several leaders out in our kennel, leaders meaning lead dogs, that will only run for one or two of us because they've built that bond for us. We have a dog named Ty Ty that runs very well for our daughter, Nicole, but she does not run well for me at all. She's definitely a daughter's girl, as if you call it that. But, yeah, you have to spend that time with them. You have to build up that respect on both ways. But, yeah, when you're out there, the way I see it is you're just one of the team. You're out there doing your thing. I often equate it to football when I talk about mushing, is you'll have your lead dogs who are the quarterback, and then you'll have your big guys in the back who are like the offensive linemen that, you know, that are just, you know, the big jocks there. You have the middle guys, the team dogs. They are the, you know, they're sort of just like the ones that are just pulling their own weight. And then you have the swing dogs who are like the special teams. They can come up and lead if they have to. They can move around in the team. They can do their thing if they have to. They're doing really specialized jobs. And then you have the musher at the back. He's sort of the coach, the head coach of the crew. And then you have everybody that's back behind you, the handlers, the support. They're like the pit crew in NASCAR. They're the assistant coaches, if you're thinking about football. They're the ones making the behind-the-scenes decisions. You know, which dog should run here? Do the harnesses fit right? Do we need new booties? All of those things. Everything has to work together in order to be a successful team.
Right. Well, yes, thank you for explaining that. And, I mean, it all makes sense to have that trust. You're out there. You have to trust them. They have to trust you. And I imagine that, you know, they're going to work harder and go forward more, maybe into places they don't know, or because they feel that trust within their musher.
Right. Yeah. That positive relationship is so important, for the musher and the dogs, but also the dogs to dogs. You know, they have to be able to respect each other as well. And that's where training comes in. That's where pairing up comes in. We always pair our dogs up by size, gait, and temperament with each other. Just like in life, we don't get along with everybody, nor do dogs. Sometimes the boys don't get along with other boys, and sometimes the girls don't get along with other girls. Some dogs run very well together. They complement each other. Our two main lead dogs, Frosty and Shock. Frosty is a little bit stronger, a little bit more attitude, I guess you would call it, whereas Shock is a little bit smarter, has a little bit more of the brains of the group. So she will, you know, turn left and right and see him when you say. And, you know, it's a very nice compliment to have those guys up there leading their way.
Well, you know, when I'm hiking out with my dogs, then they're a lab and a golden retriever, not like the dogs that you run. But, you know, when we're out in hiking in Alaska, and they often see things before I do, you know, they'll perk their head up. Like, they're letting me know, and I'm thinking, I don't see anything, but, you know, they're letting me know there's a moose, there's a bear, you know, there's a person. Now, what is it like when you have a whole team of dogs and you're out there and they encounter wildlife? I mean, do you have any stories about that, or how does the team react?
That's a great question. Depending on the number of dogs you have, every two dogs is 8 feet. So if you have 10 dogs, you have 80 feet of dogs in front of you plus your sled, which is a long distance when you think about it, on just how far that is from the tip of the lead dog's nose to where you're standing on the runners, where the eyes are, so to speak. We've had many encounters out on the trail, everything from, you know, little chipmunks that run across the trail to ravens that follow us behind, to moose and other dog teams and just about everything else. A story several years ago, I guess it was in 2011, 2012, just about the same snow conditions that we have here, relatively deep. We were cruising down the trail and making a sharp left turn, and then all of a sudden, all the dogs sort of perked up. You know, their ears kind of perked up. They gave a little bit of a hesitation. And before I know it, Casey, we were kind of in a divot in the, you know, in the snowbank where the, you know, where the trail is dug in. And it was very high banks on both sides. Before I know it, a huge moose jumped from one side of the trail to the other, from one berm to the other, right over the team. It scared me to death. I had never seen anything like that. I did not see him coming, and as soon as he jumped over, he just kept on running, you know, down the bank of the trail and kept on going. But that's really been my true encounter, or only encounter with wildlife. Moose are scary. They don't back down. You know, we have heard stories of moose charging teams and just going through the lines and trampling them. And you know, it's a scary situation. A lot of mushers carry firearms. A lot of people have had to shoot at moose out there on the trails. Luckily, I've never encountered anything like that. But, boy, that's a scary thing to be out there with moose. I haven't seen any wolves. I know in other parts of Alaska, like in, you know, in the Alaska Range and over in the Tok area, they'll see some wolves. But I've never seen them over this way.
Wow. Yeah. And for those Alaskans, they know how big a moose is. But for other people listening, maybe who have never been up close to a moose, I mean, they are huge animals. And to have one jump over your team, I'm sure that was one of those things where you were just left shaking your head. That's a good story and pretty amazing.
Yeah, it took me a little while to catch my breath at that point. I didn't know what was going on at first because, you know, because you're just cruising down the trail, you don't expect anything to happen, especially when the snow is that deep. And then all of a sudden, out of the corner of my left eye, I see this brown blurb. And within seconds, he was up. He or she, I have no idea if it was a male or a female. I just couldn't see it that quickly. But he or she was up and over the team and then just running down the trail like nothing happened.
Wow. That is so crazy. Now, I have another question, and I don't know if you've experienced this. I know you run on rivers. You're going to be running down the Sioux and up the Yentna for your big expedition here. But now I've heard that the dogs, when they're going, they won't go out onto thin ice or I know they cross open water, you know, to get across creeks, but
right.
Do they sense that danger? I mean, when you're riding, do you feel that they would stop before they got you on a thin ice situation?
You know, first off, it does take a little while to train dogs to run on the frozen lakes. We have a dog right now just entered into our B team. His name is Bastion, and he has only maybe 100 miles of sled training with him. And even now, where ice is well over a foot thick, I'm sure it's very thick up here now, but as soon as we hit the lake, he gives a hesitation, like he knows it's under there, whereas he'll be trotting along top. And then as soon as we hit that lake, he'll kind of give that hesitation and be a little leery of it. So I know that they can sense it. But, yeah, I've been out on rivers and lakes many times where the, the open water or broken through ice or whatever is on one side or the other. And my dogs are very good at steering clear of that. They will definitely steer clear of any open water that's out there, because of course they don't want to get wet either if they don't have to, especially if there's broken ice there. But one thing that we do in fall training, since it is quite rainy up here, is we do a lot of training through the big puddles, because we do have to cross rivers and creeks and things that may be open. But yeah, we work a lot through the big mud puddles that are around, and typically we'll run our teams on the ATV, and when we get in the middle of one of those big mud puddles, we'll stop the team and let them kind of hang out in the water for a while so they're not afraid of it, and it typically works very well. But I think it's interesting how that dog Bastion knows that there's that ice underneath him when we have all of this snow that's packed down into trail, but he still knows something just isn't right as we hit those lakes.
Right. That is super interesting. And, you know, up here in Alaska, you know, the professional mushers, they're our movie stars. They're our professional athletes, you know, that everyone's cheering for. And we hear a lot about that from the big races, the Iditarod and the Yukon Quest. But there's a lot of people who mush that they're not doing it in these races. They're doing it as a hobby. They're doing it just something they love to have the dogs around. And then also, it's very much used as a transportation source and to haul things up here still, right?
Yeah, some of those big canine athletes or mushing athletes that you mentioned still live off of the off the grid, off the road system, and they will park their cars on the road, hook up a whole team of dogs, and mush into their properties. I believe Brent Sass does that. He lives several miles kind of in the bush, and he does that. So he uses his dogs not only to race and for competition, but also to get him to and from his truck. I believe also a couple of kennels up in the Fairbanks area do that as well. So yeah, folks are still using their dogs for what they were originally bred to do, is to ferry people or to haul gear back and forth. Yeah, there are probably, Casey, more hobbyist or recreational mushers than there are quote-unquote pro mushers, mushers that do this to earn a living. And it's tough to earn a living in mushing. I'm sure you know, even if you win the Iditarod, it's only, I believe, a $70,000 first-place finish and a new truck. That will not even pay your dog food bill for the year if you have a large kennel like the Seavies, who've won it the last several years. But, yeah, there's a lot of folks out there that just have just a few dogs in the yard, and, you know, they hook them up and run around the trails. And then there's other folks that run expedition-type things like we do, just, you know, teaching people how to become mushers. We love doing that. That's part of our kennel plan, is to be able to teach folks how to enjoy themselves out in the wild. And then there are folks that use dogs for running trap lines, whether they're fur catchers or hunters or whatever, and they'll run their dogs to earn a living, so to speak, when they're out there trapping or hauling things. And there's an interesting guy out up north of Fairbanks. His name is Joe Henderson. He uses his dog to pick up old oil tanks that have been left over from different settlement camps throughout the state, and he picks those up and hauls those out as a way of conservation, which I think is pretty cool too.
Right. Well, and with dog teams, I mean, you know, a dog team versus a snow machine, the snow machine can run out of gas. The snow machine can freeze up. You have to feed your dogs, but you know, those dogs are there to, they're not going to have mechanical malfunctions at least. Right. So they're very much still used here in Alaska, I'm sure in other places in the world too. Now, is the sport growing? Do you think it's growing? It seems like there's always new and upcoming, you know, mushers and both more girls, it seems like, are doing it now as well. What do you, give me a little info on that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We had a show here on our sister show here called Mushing Radio that I host with a friend of ours named Alex. We were just talking about that last week. There's a lot of new rookies that are in Iditarod this year who we've never heard of from a lot of different countries. They're from Belgium and Czech Republic and New Zealand and all sorts of other places. I think the Iditarod is growing because of, you know, just the awareness of it. But what's alarming or what's saddening, Casey, is every year the junior races are very slow to catch up. Typically, we only have a little batch of kids, 8, 9, 10 kids that are running those junior races, whether it be the Willow 100 or the Junior Iditarod or races like that. So the only way that this sport can really grow is if we have more junior mushers involved. And that's a tough thing to do because a lot of those kids are the you know, the sons and daughters of the bigger families, like Conway Seavey, the youngest of the Seavey group, ran Junior Iditarod and won a few times back in the day. People that work with the Reddingtons are often very good at the junior races, but very few kids are getting involved, and I think that that's alarming for the sport.
Man, well, maybe in the future here I can get my kids more involved, because it's definitely something that, you know, it comes this time of year and you start talking about it and you get excited, but it isn't a seasonal thing. You obviously have to, you know, this is a whole year. It's a commitment to your dogs, and to be a good musher and a good caretaker, you don't do it just during the racing season. I know that. But, you know, last year during Iditarod, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say quickly, it's a 365-day-a-year job. Everything that you do in your life is revolving around the dogs. I don't know how many date nights with my wife, Michelle, have been canceled because we have to take care of the dogs, or how vacations are reworked if we have to find handler help to work with us. Yeah, it's definitely a commitment that is every day, and that is a multi-year commitment. So it's not something you can just do, you know, like cross-country skiing. Buy a set of skis, you can ski a few times and put them in the closet and never work with them again. It doesn't work like that in mushing.
Right. Nope. If you're involved, you're involved for sure. And we had a really unique experience last year. Our family got to take care of drop dogs for Daug,
right.
Torloff Olsen. He's from Hammerfest, Norway, which is the northernmost town in the world. But anyways, it was so awesome to meet him. And we got to go, and when he dropped dogs, which means they, you know, for whatever reason, they weren't going to continue running the race for the Iditarod, so they'd fly him back to Anchorage. And so we got to go pick him up, and we got to keep him in our backyard. And oh my gosh, we got a taste of just a little taste of what it takes just to take care of them. And, you know, we weren't running them. We were just giving them a comfortable place to be and feeding them. But, it was fun. I think we ended up with about 6 of them in our backyard, and then we got to transport like all 17 of his dogs after the race was done. And so, you know, by the end of that few week experience, we learned a lot.
Right. That is a fun experience, isn't it, to have those remarkable canine athletes at your house. I've done it for a couple of times for our friend Hugh Neff. He has used us as his drop dog point, and since we have the kennel space, they'll typically stay here. And it is an interesting perspective, especially if you've never been around sled dogs, just to see the care that they take. You know, you have to go out and clean up after them a couple of times a day. You have to feed them. You have to make sure everybody's getting along. You have to bring the buckets in. If you don't have a heated spot outside, you have to move the water around. It's a chore, isn't it?
It is, and it was so much fun, though, to just see each of the dogs' personalities, and these are dogs we didn't know, and just the bond that we created in just that short time, and it was just a joy to have them, so we felt very honored and fun to make a new friend that, you know, is over on the other side of the world here, and I don't know if he's doing the race again this year. I'm not sure, but we'll be excited when we get to see him again, and maybe someday visit Norway. You know, that kind of makes the connection. There's races in other parts of the world, and kind of makes it fun to think about visiting those places as well.
Exactly. You know, as we mentioned, it's becoming a worldwide sport for sure. Casey, we are just about out of time. Do you have one final question before we go?
Well, you did great. I enjoyed learning, and I can tell that you love it. And, you know, thinking about our Be Alive theme, I mean, I'm guessing you feel pretty alive when you're out there on those runners of the sled.
You know, I do for sure. And you know what's interesting about mushing, Casey, is you learn from everybody. Everybody does things a little different. You know, you mentioned your friend in Norway. He may do his setup. It may be entirely different than mine. You know, we talked about Brent Sass, Iditarod musher, may be entirely different from, we talked about Hugh, our friend, may be entirely different from him. So it's so interesting to have all of the different ways to do one thing or another. And I think that's where the athletic part of it comes involved, the thinking part of it, or that coaching part that we talked about. Just the myriad ways that things are done to reach the end goal, you know, whether it's winning Iditarod or just running around the block with your dogs or, you know, going on expeditions or sprint racing or trap lining or whatever. It's still the sport of mushing. It's still working with sled dogs. But everybody has not only a common goal to take care of their dogs, but also a mutual respect between the dog and the musher.
Right. And, hey, one last thing, just so that if anyone's, you know, they're listening to this and they want to look you up, what was the name of your kennel again? And then you have a dog business. And so could you tell us those?
Yes, we are Team Aneke. I-N-E-K-A is our name. We're on Facebook and we're also on the web, just teamaneke.com. We're also on Twitter and Instagram. And our dog training business is called Alaska Dog Works. We work with just about every dog imaginable, everything from your basic obedience sit, stay, come stuff to service dogs. We train service dogs for returning soldiers with PTSD, as well as mobility dogs for people all over the country. We do therapy dogs for visits to hospitals and reading programs at, like, libraries and things like that. And we'll occasionally do some protection training for folks that need that type of dog. And we'll do whatever sport you're interested in if we can find a place to do it, whether that's nose work or agility or dock diving or whatever you're interested in. Our life, Casey, we are blessed to be around dogs just about 24/7.
That sounds like a good life, Robert.
Thank you very much. All right, Casey, we are definitely out of time. Do you have any idea what you want to talk about next time?
I always have too many ideas. I don't know. We're going to have to think. Actually, I have a friend who I just saw. There was an article in the paper, and she is a Alaska Airlines captain, and she is donating her kidney to help another Alaska Airlines employee. And I just think that is just obviously so admirable, so courageous, and I'm excited for both of them. And I don't know, maybe we could get her on here to tell us about that. And that might be something that would be fun.
Make the connection for sure. We'd love to have a guest on, and those are always interesting spice to the show when we can bring somebody else's perspective as well. So we will talk to you guys next week for sure. My name is Robert Forto, and my co-host is Casey Randall. Make sure you check out her campaign, Be Alive, on Facebook. Check for the green and white banner, the same banner that you see as you're listening to the show here on the radio or on your iPhone or whatever you're listening to it. It is the same logo. Go out there and like her page and follow us along, and I guarantee you will love the message. So, Casey, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next time, okay?
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you very much, guys. See you soon.
This is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings, much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service.